welcome to another amazing show. Another amazing show with an amazing guy. That guy being me, Josh Ricardo. It's the Slam Pick Podcast. Going on our fourth year of doing it well. Oh, fuck me, man. Sorry for the little hiatus. I've been working on another project as well as traveling a bit, which leads me into my guest, episode 108. That's my text. Forgot to turn it off because I'm an amateur. My fiance is from Rochester, New York. We've been dating for about 6 years, and I started to go with her probably within a year of us dating to visit her family out there, maybe twice a year. We'll call it twice a year. And every comic, I like to think every comic, and if you're a professional, looks for rooms to play and clubs to play in whatever area you're in. Because, you know, if I have to visit your family, fiance, then I want to make some money because that would make it worthwhile. Bah! JK. Anyways, I looked up this place called The Comedy Club, and I remember when I looked it up that some buddies of mine who are more established have played it. And I was looking at their roster, and it was just like big name after big name after big name. And I said, you know, I might not have the credits yet to play this room, but, you know, let me meet the guy who runs it. And I met Mark Ippolito, who's our guest today. Literally had like a 15-20 minute conversation. He was really engaging, nice guy, and then basically kind of lost touch for the last couple years. And then I was lucky enough to wrangle him in last week. And he agreed to do an interview, and we got to chop it up about comedy. The dude's a super nice guy, really knowledgeable, and it's really kind of a tribute to this guy and his motivation that the club gets the names it gets. Rochester's a really great town, but you wouldn't suspect that they would warrant getting a Drew Carey or Marc Maron, but for those of you that don't know stand-up, very well, as far as the intricate workings of it, if you will. to get big names, it means that the owner, proprietor, booker has these relationships built with not only the agencies, but also the comics, where the comics go, I want to come back there. And Mark keeps getting big name after big name. So that's a testament to him and the way he runs his operation. And when you listen to the episode, you'll see why the dude really gets it. So I was fortunate enough to talk to him, and here he is. I'm a lucky man, always lucky, not only because I usually interview big-breasted women, but today I get to talk to not only a fellow paisan, but also the man that runs, the proprietor, the dude who runs the Rochester Comedy Club, the Comedy Club, Mr. Mark Ippolito. Did I say that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, shit, I nailed it. I'm on fire today. And I'm fucking jet lagged, Delta, fuck you, and I'm still nailing it. So, context for the audience. I come to Rochester a lot because my fiance's family's from here. So, I would never have came here usually. It's not a place I don't know why I would never want to come to. There's a lot of beautiful Italian women with huge asses here. Yes. That sounds like a place for me. But I didn't know that until I met her. I live in New York City, as a lot of the listeners already know. And I started coming out here about 6 years ago, and just being a comic, wherever you're a comic, you go to where the comedy is, right?
Correct.
So what I did was I looked up where the comedy was, and then when I saw the name The Comedy Club, it hit me, like it all kind of flooded back to me because I play the road so much, and you know, out in New York City, a lot of guys play this room that are well-known guys, very established guys. Like I was really good friends with Patrice.
Yes.
Harrison, his buddy has played here before too.
Yeah, Harrison.
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys I know that have played here. And when I read the name, I was like, "Fuck, that's the same place."
Right.
So I popped in and I got lucky, and you were here. And this was like I think 3 years ago or something like that. And just Mark was like a fucking character, like cool guy. Like you didn't know me. We were like sort of chatting, and we kind of hit it off, and it was cool.
Thanks.
And the show now, like the podcast has been doing well, and I thought, oh, that would be great to just talk shop.
hot pick. I
with you, man.
It. That's some awesome. That was like a great intro, man.
Yeah, I really blowed you right there. You filled up.
You actually mentioned somebody who was very like pioneering in this whole establishment, Patrice.
Really?
I had a lot of roots in a club that was before here. It was called the Comics Cafe. And I started actually in the box office when that opened. And
so you literally started from the bottom.
Yeah.
You were in the box office.
I was in college. I was going to college for business. And
here in Rochester, obviously. Okay.
At Brockport State University. Okay. Yeah, it's like a half hour away from here. And I was in the box office, working the box office, and I did that essentially so I could do my homework at the same time.
Yeah,
and
which is smart.
They put an ad out, you know, new comedy club coming into town. It didn't exist.
Now, were you into comedy? Was that something like you were really into? Or just low-level college kids type stuff?
I bought Eddie Murphy's Raw.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I had, you know, I watched Dice. Because
that's when comedy was huge. Like those mid-80s to the early 90s was almost oversaturated the market with stand-up at the time.
I was a huge comedy fan, but at the time I didn't really realize how much I was.
Okay.
Until I got involved in the comedy clubs. And at that point, I believe I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was in college, and I essentially took the job because I could do the homework. And I also had a martial arts background. And manager at the time, her name is Rachel Petrikowski, who actually works here now. She found out that I had martial arts. She's like, hey, listen. She goes, why don't you come in and after you're done in the box office, you can work security. So I was working security.
So for the people at home, okay, just because I've been in comedy a long time, you would think, like, why would they need a guy who does fucking karate to be in? Because people are out of their minds. People Absolutely. Lose their minds in comedy clubs. Like, yes. I have been a comic since I'm 21, and more fights than ever have I seen happen in the middle of a comedy show.
Absolutely.
So that's why they need a dude who's got martial arts right. background to do it.
There's a lot of people who just think that their job is to go into a comedy club and yell at the comedian, and they think mm-hmm. that's their comedy club experience. They've never been to one before, but they've seen stuff on TV. They're like,
they're gonna help him out, right?
Yeah. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna yell and I'm gonna be the funniest guy here. It's like, no, you're gonna get tossed out because 200 other people bought tickets not to hear your dumb ass.
And here's what happens is, so Mark is a you're not like a tall guy, but you're like you're a thick guy, right?
6 foot, 230 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, for bouncers, I mean, you're like, yeah. I mean, you're not a short guy by any means, 6 foot. Yeah. But it's funny because what happens is, this is what happens. The person running his mouth, he has a huge chip on his shoulder already. I know this because I'm the guy with the mic. I have the right. biggest chip at anybody. So this guy who has a huge chip doesn't have the balls to do what I do, but he's going to yell out. And now Mark has to go up and go, hey, yeah. I'm going to need you to quiet down.
Listen, guys, honestly, I know you guys want to talk. If you want to do it, you can go out to the front room and do it. But if you continue to do it in here, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
So that's a warning, right? So these fucking people, two kinds of people. The person that goes, oh, thank you, I appreciate it. Sorry, I'll be quiet. And then the douchebag of the world, the turd.
Fuck you, man. I'm here to have fucking fun. You're ruining my fucking time. Fuck you. Who the fuck are you?
And then that's when the martial arts
then
comes in.
That's when they got to get bounced out. And that's when usually that's when the whole rest of the crowd, the audience claps because they're getting tossed
out.
Oh,
yeah.
And then that jerk off, you know, essentially, you know, after he's out of the room, the comedian's now back doing his set. His timing is fine. He has nobody ruining all of his, you know.
So when, okay, this is what's great. This is a great place to start because you learn the business from literally the front door.
That's
to the back
correct.
Door. You know what I mean?
And bringing back Patrice O'Neill. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know any of his history as well.
I opened for him a couple times, and we had long drives, but I didn't dive too deep into his life.
Before Patrice O'Neill on stage, Patrice O'Neill, door guy.
Here?
No.
No, but in another place?
Correct.
Okay, so before Boston. Stand-up, he was...
Absolutely.
Because I know Patrice played ball in college. He's a big... He was a big, big guy. He was about 6'4". He's a huge dude.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that makes sense. You see that guy, you might shut up.
Right, and he used to come up with, you know, obviously Bill Burr and Norton, all those guys. You know, he knew all those guys when they were coming up. And
he's a Boston guy, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, he's a Boston guy.
But getting back to that being said, you know, here I am now... Being a bouncer, one of the things that they do is they take glasses and they take bottles and they kind of bust tables because those become objects,
right?
Weapons.
Yeah,
and you don't want those up. Now all of a sudden I know what sections people are at because they're asking me for drinks, this and that. So now I'm filling in for wait shifts.
Yeah.
Then I'm, you know, now I'm going in the kitchen. And,
let's rewind. Hold on. So how long until you know, like, how many warnings? This is what's great about you is right. that you run a club now, correct. And a lot of times, like, I work in clubs where the guy is the owner and booker, and he doesn't understand what it means to truly be on the ground floor. And because a person's buying a lot of drinks, a loudmouth, they let them go for longer than they should. But I feel like because you know the deal.
No, you got
to. How many until you're like, because you probably gauge personalities pretty well, absolutely. Right? You have instincts where you go, that person, if I just, you know, if I can deal with them in a way that they'll chill, or it's a person like, I need to lead that guy out by his head in
Mark Ippolito now, one of the things I asked somebody at the beginning of the week as a headliner, I'm like, hey, what if somebody's out of control? Do you have like a, you want me to, you know, you have like a code word you want to say something like, usually it's, I want to buy this guy a Diet Coke. Because if you, obviously nobody wants a Diet Coke. Yeah, nobody wants to buy anybody a Diet Coke. So if a headliner says, I want to buy this guy a Diet Coke, that means get him the fuck out of the room.
Yeah.
But a lot of headliners that I've talked to says, just let it go, and then if I need you, I'll say something.
Sure.
But some people are like, no, please don't let anybody interrupt. And then you have guys like Nick DiPaolo, one of the
I love Nick. Good for, love Nick.
Don't interrupt his set.
No, he's no. fucking
don't
that guy.
Don't even text during his set. Don't do anything during Nick's set. So Nick, great I about, love you to death. But
Nick, if you're listening,
shit.
I love you, buddy. It's so hilarious to me because Nick is so anti what's current. Like, I get it. Like, I don't want anybody texting during my set, too, but he's, like, so anti against, like, fuck it. I don't care if phones exist. When you come in this room, you better fucking throw them out. Like,
right.
He doesn't want to adapt at all. Exactly. He does his own thing.
Best writer, by the way.
Oh, Nick? Nick is amazing.
Best writer. No.
Oh, writer. Okay, yeah.
The best thing in a writer, and for those of you who don't know, a writer is something
them.
That comes along with a contract when you hire a comedian. The writers, there are like specific requirements. Like it could be anything from like green M&Ms in the room.
Yeah, that's the famous one, the Led Zeppelin one, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. His is no bachelorette parties during my show.
Which is genius, but absolutely. A lot of your business.
But see, the thing
to a degree.
Is, I agree.
Because you were renting from the beginning, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Nothing more annoying than 12 screaming women who want to make the night all about them.
Sure.
Sitting in the front with penis straws, fucking yapping about how Jolie's getting married. Let's do fucking shots. Grape bombs. And the comedian's trying to do some jokes, and you got fucking, you know, 150 people who don't give a fuck about Jolie and her fucking wild ride with fucking Juan that they're going on in a month, and they're fucking penis straws and their boas and their fucking tiaras and all that bullshit.
Can you tell that he's seen a few of those already,
they
folks?
Just want to see a show, and you got you yapping.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works, and you know, depending on who the headliner is, they'll incorporate in the show, destroy them.
If you're a great improv, like I'm really great at improv. So like I was headlining the Hartford. Oh my God! The brouhaha that I have down there, and there was a party, a bachelorette party, and I was in the back, and I was thinking to myself, this is gonna be shit because they're there, and it was the first time ever that it was a bachelorette party that wasn't like all about them.
They were just listening.
It was a shock. It was like it was shocking because you're almost like depending on them being assholes.
Fuck up the show.
Yeah, right. You're depending on it almost, so you can really tear into somebody. And I was like, wow, that's pretty. But for the most part, like, that's hilarious that he goes, okay, no bachelor.
No, it's in his writer.
That's
no
amazing.
Bachelor. Because, you know, Nick, at his level, is pretty, that's the top level.
Yeah,
people want to be there. And with all due respect, Nick DiPaolo has fans.
Yeah.
And those fans want to see Nick DiPaolo.
Sure.
Which is a fine-tuned set to the point of an NFL quarterback, you know, training. This guy is at the top level of his game. It's He's not there to entertain fucking Clara with the penis straw. He's there to fucking make 200 of his fans just fucking laugh hysterically at, you know, how he sees the world.
Yeah.
And when, you know, you got Clara coming in, interrupting this build-up and this professional, you know, this training of going out working new material all the time, constantly preparing. At his level, it's just... it's the biggest level there is.
Yeah.
So to interrupt that is kind of like...
it's sacrilege, man.
Yeah.
It really is.
Absolutely.
It's like interrupting a guy doing that. People watch those people do those fucking blow the glass or whatever, like create shit out of glass and all that kind of artesian type of shit. That's what that guy does.
Right.
Like, he's on that level.
The cheerleaders heckling the quarterback
it really
in the middle
is.
Of a play.
That's a great analogy. No,
so,
you're right.
You know, there's timing involved. there's punchlines, there's key times to that everybody needs to pay attention to these, you know, perfectly crafted sets that these, you know, professionals, and at that level is beyond professional level, and for you to interrupt is just the most horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
And that's why I understand at his level.
Yeah.
So Nick, love you to death. Yeah, don't text at Nick shows. Don't talk to Nick. Pay attention.
This is going to be the writer for fans to listen to before they attend a Nick DiPaolo performance.
But 95% of the people that go to Nick DiPaolo shows are Nick DiPaolo fans.
Oh, yeah.
And they're listening. It's a great crowd.
And like you said, show. He has a following that warrants that kind of attention to detail.
Absolutely.
You know, like I'm beginning my career in that sense, in that regard. I don't have that right to go in and go, you know, unless I can get 500 people in a room guaranteed.
Right.
Then I can start making demands. Like that,
right.
Which make fucking sense, because like you said, it makes sense.
And
it does something
the same
specific.
Token, there's other quarterbacks, there's other headliners at that same professional level who love the improv, who love some of the crowd input, and they're saying, "Oh, what'd you say?" And then all of a sudden, boom, they're either roasting the shit out of them or using them to incorporate other jokes that you.
Which isn't a good idea, folks. Poke a polar bear. I mean, don't do it. If you guys have been working a long time. I mean, don't do it.
Patrice O'Neill was another great example.
Yeah,
if people,
because he's very conversational.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't. It was his thoughts.
Right.
He was doing it in a form that made you believe that he actually wanted your input. Right. And in reality, he was setting you up to destroy you.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah. I love that.
Misdirection.
Yeah. It's so great.
A magician.
It really was a magician
of the
way.
Mind, but I hate saying magician when it comes to comedy.
Yeah,
especially
yeah,
with a great person. But
he's a weird taste
in the misdirection
mouth.
Definitely was there. But an amazing guy who did four different shows because he would set up different people. And then And I'm glad that you brought him up because, to be quite honest with you, after, you know, the Comics Cafe, make it a long story short, when I was there, I graduated with a business degree, and essentially at that point I did every position there.
So how many years did you work there?
11.
So 11 years, and through that 11 years, I assume before the 11 years up, you graduated. So probably
graduated college. At that
stuck
point,
around
the
for
owner,
a couple more
the
years.
The owner said, listen, you got a business degree. Run the club. I ran the club 2 years into that. He sold it to somebody, and then that new owner essentially was...
drove it into the ground in a way.
Let's just say this.
I said it. Mark didn't say it.
He just didn't know what... I don't really want to say anything bad about anybody,
of course,
period.
Yeah.
But let's just say, like, Robert Schimmel was at the club.
Another great comic. Bob Schimmel's amazing. If you don't know Bob Schimmel, he's dead too. Look him up.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal.
Absolutely phenomenal. Do yourself a favor, and if you're a comedy fan in any bit, just watch his sets. Well, anyways, he was there the week of the transaction, and he came and he's like, why are we paying this guy this amount of money? And then I was like, well, because it's Robert Schimmel, this and that. And he's like, well, you know, we're going to go, we're going to telemarket, we're going to get lower acts, and we're just going to get people here, this and that. And I was like, bro, I go, not going to work.
Because people do that. I mean, there are a lot of clubs that stay open just by the sheer, I'll give you 2 for 1,
right.
We'll pay a guy to headline for $1,000 less
and
or whatever.
It's called papering.
Yeah.
And
Okay. Every
club does it, including us. But at that point, that club didn't need to do any paper.
It was that built already.
It was that great of a club.
Because a lot of it comes with, not to cut you off, but I want people to understand the ins and outs of it all. Part of it is also you've built up a following.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the purpose of our interview is.
Absolutely.
Is that, because with me, what's fascinating is Rochester, to me, I don't know what it is on the level of nation cities, what level it's like, what number it's at.
We're number 3 in New York State.
Okay, so you're number 3 in New York
after
State.
After Buffalo and obviously after New York.
But like you said, it's not a huge, huge town. And
right.
You would, but there's a lot of like, it's very sneaky when it comes to the arts. I mean, Kodak was here.
Correct.
And still is here. There's a lot of different artists that come from here. I mean, there is an art background. There's a culture here for that.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you wouldn't think when you think of comedy, Rochester, but some of the biggest acts in the nation come through this club.
Right.
And
correct.
That's what always was like really impressive to me. And I feel like this is what we're talking about now.
Absolutely.
That club kind of had that going on, this cafe.
The
Comedy
Cafe did.
Comics
and,
Cafe.
And at, before it was taken over by the new owner and I left, we had people like Lisa Lampanelli, who would do 7 shows a week, and I believe we, it would be for money that I'm not going to discuss, but it wasn't anywhere where she's making
now. Of course,
now. But, you know, now that, you know, there's a lot of people that have gone through that stage, and I've known.
Was it a Thursday through Saturday room?
No, that was a Wednesday through Sunday
room. So you did one Wednesday, one Thursday, and then the two Friday, Saturday, and then one Sunday.
Correct.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And that's when the economy was great and things were good.
How many clubs do that now, man? Yeah, it's hard, right? How many nights here at the Comedy Club?
Now, we base our nights Thursday through Saturday for our headliners. And then I'm, you know, currently I'm doing special shows on Wednesdays and Sundays.
Nice.
Special events. And, you know, that seems to be the formula that we've fallen into. Mm-hmm. I hope that the economy boosts enough for people to start going out on Wednesday nights to see headliners.
Yeah.
And Sundays, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes we do comedy shows that for headliners on Sundays, and usually the big acts like Steve-O, I'll do seven shows for.
Yeah.
Like, because right now he just did a Showtime special, and he seems to be like the you know, everybody's talking about him selling out clubs.
Uh-huh.
No one would expect Steve-O to be doing stand-up right now.
But if he's doing it, okay.
I'll give you an example. Mark Maron's coming up in a couple weeks.
So awesome.
Absolutely gigantic beast in this industry.
Yeah.
So Craig Robertson I got coming. He's going to be doing
Craig's
six
cool.
shows.
Yeah.
Craig's phenomenal. Yeah. Can't wait. Chris D'Elia's coming up. I believe he's doing five.
These are big national. These are national acts coming here.
Correct.
To Rochester. Which I'm not shitting on Rochester. I've grown to really love, but it's very working class, which I'm very working class, mm-hmm. so it fits my mold anyways. But when you think of these big acts, you think, oh, maybe Miami or whatever. But no, they're coming here, man. Yeah, that's part of you, though.
But you've said it. Rochester has been known for the arts. Kodak is, you know, obviously the film industry is pretty much the backbone of it. Now, not so much since it's digital, but there's people like Martin Scorsese who still insist on using Kodak film for their movies.
Mm-hmm.
Kodak, you know, pretty much built this city, even though now it's a bankrupt company. You know, there was a lot of arts, a lot of cool things that happened here.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of artists have come here. But being that my history was in the comedy club, I've literally been working in comedy clubs every day of my life for 25 years.
God bless you.
So,
fuck.
Yeah, I know.
You don't seem as jaded as you should be.
You know what?
You seem all right.
People always say, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing.
I book comedians. That's what's wrong.
Your face. You know
what's wrong with your face?
But you know what? I found something that is more difficult than booking comedians, and that's booking bands. And booking,
really?
It is, because, you know,
I got to talk to Steven Van Zandt about that. Okay, Steven, I'm going to talk to you when I see you about why it's so difficult to book bands.
I'll tell you why. Comedians, you got one guy.
Oh, it's the multiples.
Five schedules you got to deal with. Oh, no, Tommy's fucking bar mitzvah is on the 14th.
Well, you're dealing with national acts, but I'm assuming with the bands here, you're not dealing with Bruce and the East Street Band. You're dealing with guys that play in the region, right?
Correct.
In the area.
And that's
so they got to get off their job at wherever, UPS, whatever, fire department, wherever it is, they got to make money.
Right.
They got to get the bass player has to get off,
you're
right?
Absolutely,
okay.
Right.
So that would be a pain in the ass,
yes.
Right? That'd be brutal.
But yeah, booking comics is, you know, it's definitely, you know, I've been booking for 15, and I got to tell you, I've been very blessed. I've known a lot of great people. And you brought up Patrice, and right where you're sitting right now, me and Patrice were eating $100 worth of sushi, and we were just going nuts. And he said to me, at the time, my first partner here at the comedy club just left the week prior, and I was just kind of like, down in the dumps. And he said to me, he goes, you know, man, this is the best. He said, it's called the comedy club, and it's got a brick wall. There's no gimmicks and this and that. He goes, man, you did the right thing, and stick with it. And, you know, that was 6 years ago.
Jeez.
And it was, and it stuck with me. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah, he's right, though. I mean, there's no airs about this place.
Right.
This is what comics, real, like, especially I'm a New York City guy, so we love this kind of, like, when I come into a room and it's like, this is built for stand-up, this is like, this room. I mean, it's big. It seats, what, 300?
No, we only seat 190.
It looks like it the way it's laid out, it looks huge.
And that's the cool thing about it, is because like people like Patrice would come through, and it's intimate.
It is.
So
190 is intimate. Yeah.
Right. It's very intimate. You get to see, you know, like I've had Drew Carey here.
Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Richard Lewis, Louis Anderson, David Koechner. I've had all the Super Troopers. The Impractical Jokers have been here. Marlon Wayans, Sean Wayans, the list goes on. Sinbad.
Yeah.
You know, I've had pretty much Amy Schumer before she started her stadium tour. And I've had pretty much, you know, I really like to get Bill Burr and Louis C.K. Yeah. So if either one of you just happen to be listening to this, you know, we could totally make a deal.
I'll hook you up. Don't worry. I'll get you Mark's email. Whatever Please. I can do. Just let me open for you.
But, yeah, you know, that's the one thing I was blessed with because, like, I've always – there was never a gimmick. And the one guy that I got involved with after the Comics Cafe closed, he was like, all right, we're going to give free shrimp dinners away to this and this. And I'm like, no, man. It's like, we're just going to put good talent on stage.
And let the people figure it out.
Comedy.
Yeah.
Sell comedy. Our product is comedy. Our mm-hmm. product is comedians. And that's it. I'm not going to be like a fucking Applebee's.
Sure.
With a manager who's blowing the fuck up at people because their burger is too rare or something like that.
Yeah.
Make them a new fucking burger, but don't interrupt that fucking show.
Yeah.
You know.
I love that, man.
It's all about the show.
When you were 100%. Working at the comics, when you were working at the Comics Cafe, when you were learning about the business and you were thinking about possibly going into it, do you recall the moment, what year it was into the tenure, and a lot of the contacts that you built up there comedy wise a lot of them must have followed you over here? I mean, give a breakdown of how that even came about, where you opened up your own space.
Well, what happened was, at the same time, comedy clubs where comedy, there was this huge explosion. And then it kind of started dying out. Like I said, we were doing
late 90s? Shows. Yeah. Around, is that where we're at right now? We were 98, 99? Okay.
We were doing 7 shows a week. Everything, you couldn't go wrong. Tuesday nights were packed for open mic. You know?
Wow.
And it just, you know, you just couldn't do anything wrong. And then suddenly it all changed. And, you know, coming in here, one of the things, like I said, I wanted to make sure that there was just no gimmicks, because the last owner, it was all about gimmicks. It was all about get a free thing with this, get a free thing with that, do this, yada yada. And it was, and the integrity of what was on stage wasn't there.
That's probably the key word there, is integrity. You start to compromise a lot of that when you do shit like that.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. And I know a business is business, and you have to pay bills. And you know, sometimes you have to do things that you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, pool halls were dying. And what you're sitting in right now used to be a pool hall. And a friend of mine, Mike Colicchio, owned this pool hall, and next to it was a country western bar, Daisy mm-hmm. Dukes. And I convinced him, I said, listen, dude, let's just take out all these pool tables, put in tables and chairs, and, you know, we'll do the comedy. And then he was like, well, no, we just put up this glitter and this and that. And this guy, Joe T., who also was involved heavily, and I got to give him both props, if it wasn't for either one of them, this would have never happened. We'll come up with this and this and that. And I said, no, let's just keep it simple. The comedy club, brick wall, bar stool, mic, it.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it. And, you know, Joe left. Mike eventually ended up selling the Daisy Dukes, and the comedy club kind of just grew. And what happened was the Daisy Dukes kind of just got on the crappy side. It was
because I was here last. It was Daisy Dukes. How long ago was it, Daisy Dukes?
It was 2 years ago.
Okay, so it's recently that it's flipped over.
And I've been blessed because I took on 2 investors, a man named John and a man named Anthony, who completely invested their lives into turning Daisy Dukes into what's called AJ's Tap and Steakhouse.
Looks great in there, by the way. I just walked in. You should, yeah. Stunning. We'll plug it at the end, but yeah, it's so great.
Food is phenomenal. Now, you know, bringing. What you asked originally is, you know, who came over with you? Well, a lot of the employees here used to work at the Comics Cafe. And then, like, the bartender back here and a couple of the servers on the floor. The girl Rachel, who I mentioned, who was the manager of the Comics Cafe, actually works in the box office here now. There was a couple of great comedians that performed there and work there that actually came over. And
yeah, how do you pull that off? Because, I mean, it's not you don't wake up the next day and go, I'm going to open a comedy club and I'm going to move some pool tables and then you're going to book Richard Lewis. I mean, there you have to get the bigger guys. You have to show that not only you can meet their minimum or whatever they charge, but also that it's going to be a viable situation for them. And it's not, I mean, you don't just do that. I mean, that's hard. It must have taken a minute, even though you already worked in the comedy industry, to get the word out to the different agents and whoever you have to speak with that, hey, this is reputable.
The first year, we bullshitted our way through everything.
So you fake it till you made it.
Absolutely. We were just like, yeah, you know, talk to this guy, talk to that guy. I had a couple of great friends that Bobby Slayton, who I, from the Comics Cafe, Jimmy Schubert.
Yeah, Jimmy's Rich, great. Love Rich Jimmy, Boss. Nice guy. I know Rich was a good guy too. Yeah,
yeah. All those guys I knew beforehand, and I would be like, yeah, talk to Rich. He plays the room all the time. This and that, and yada yada. And you know, it just built and came together. Yeah. But essentially, it was who I knew in the beginning. All of a sudden, we're in positions of, you know, agents now, different agencies. You know, I never really just stuck with one agent. I stuck with, like, five or six, you know, guys that were, you know, I knew were reputable and I knew from the comedy business. And quite honestly, I used to do drugs and drink with.
Yeah.
You know, awesome. And now all of a sudden,
it's the best way to make any connection, right, man. Give me some Molly and we can probably be best friends.
Sorry, girls, my daughters, when you hear this, the reality of the situation is, you know, that's what you did. You partied with everybody, you got to know everybody after
some
the
great
shows.
Parties with comics in the 90s, I bet, before Coke really became like a problem for everybody. I bet the 90s were so great. Between Kennison stories alone, they must have been great.
We had a condo. And for what you guys, for listeners at home, one of the things you have to do is you have to put comedians up to stay as they come and perform. It's one of the quote-unquote requirements for people to come. Usually you put them up depending on their level of ability.
Sure, the comedy condo.
The comedy condo is for your everyday act.
Exactly. I've been in many a comedy condo, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever wanted to know.
But we had a comedy condo at the Comics Cafe, and literally I think every employee had a key, and after every show, that's
the party spot, man.
There would literally be 30
people
there.
It used to be gross. Like, La Jolla Comedy Store has a comedy condo. I used to hang out in all the time. And beautiful, probably like millions of dollars worth of property. But you could tell some people have shot some semen around there, done whatever you can think of in
total
fucking
crime
place. And that's kind of the beauty of it. That's kind of the charm, if you will.
It's like you're back in college again with all your buddies in a dorm room. You know what I mean?
That's really like being a comic. What it is, if you don't evolve as a human being, a lot of guys I know who are 40, 50 years old,
right,
is that life of like comedy condo. Let's do it up. Let's figure it out.
Absolutely. And, man, you know, and a lot of times you'll have your feature act and your headliner staying there.
That's
so
right. Yeah.
Obviously, you know, comedians and people in the comedy business get along great, usually.
Oh, my God.
So it either end up being like the, you know, like two best friends by the end of the weekend, or like two people that
hate
each other.
Can't stand one another.
You get some comedians who are completely particular about things, or completely OCD about.
And a lot of us are. I think a lot of us are on the spectrum. I'm not making light of autism. I'm being serious. I've met a lot of comics. Socially, they can't look in the eyes.
Right.
They have a lot of problems socially. A lot of them are intelligent, and they come off kind of on that spectrum sometimes.
Well, isn't that the ongoing myth about us all in the comedy business, is that there's just something fucking absolutely
totally
wrong with us all?
I look at you and I'm trying to figure it out. Like, this fucking guy.
Me right now, it's kids, mortgage, wife. No, I'm just kidding.
Real
I
like
love
shit.
All three of them.
Even the mortgage he loves, guys.
Yes,
don't worry about
even
it.
The
he
mortgage.
Loves paying it.
No, but, you know, but there's, there are a lot of comedians, I really like manic depressives.
No,
and,
it's true.
And they, you know, the comedy is where they get themselves out of these holes. Mm-hmm. And God bless them, because that's much nicer than a drug can ever be.
No, but.
And when you're making somebody laugh, the endorphins is what, you know, the drugs make you feel anyways.
Yeah.
And that's what their high is. And I'm on stage and I'm fucking.
It's when you come off, though, you want to get that high. And a lot of these dudes, unfortunately, that happens. You know, like Mitch. A lot of guys. I mean, even I think Richard, Jenny. I mean, you must have worked with him a few times before he died. I mean, Richard was
There's a ton of comedians that.
It's sad, man. We lost a lot. A lot of us have been lost. It's a hard industry to be in.
It's a very tough industry to be in, especially at the first, like, you know, if there's five levels of comedy and, you know, of being a comedian, you know, like the first three to four are the tough ones.
Oh, yeah.
Being on the road, you know, alone.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing for me now, is that I'm engaged now and I'm working now more than ever. And when you're trying to do that, you're like, wow, I'm succeeding, and you're excited.
Right.
And then by the sixth month of the year, you're like, this is fucking lonely.
Right.
You know, because now I'm not able to bang anybody because I got to be monogamous.
Yeah.
And now, like, I got to go. I'll go to a movie by myself.
And
eat some shitty dinner.
Shitty
dinner.
And people think, oh, my God, the road is awesome and this and that. You know what I mean?
It's not.
If you're a single guy who's handsome and can slang girls,
I used to be able to do that. Not God, anymore. That's God, over.
God bless you, David Lee Roth.
Seriously.
But if you're fucking, you know, on your way to being married or married, and let's say you want to be healthy,
sure,
you know, eat right, this and that, the road fucking blows.
Kills you.
But it then when you get to that fifth level of comedy, you know,
I have my rider.
You get to pick what the fuck you want. Yeah. I want a salad with bib lettuce.
And now it makes sense when you see that, because I think that's what's great about you and why I think it's interesting to talk to someone like you, because I always have comics on who bitch about not getting booked or bitch about this or how hard it is. People don't understand how hard it is to be you.
Right. Like,
people email you constantly to get work.
Yes.
And you are put in a position where I think a lot of guys, bookers can go one or two ways. That power way, I've seen people eat themselves up with that power, which is kind of an illusion to agree. And I've seen people be like you, where it's really abrupt, really direct, very business, that it's like, hey, I can't fucking give everybody money. It right. doesn't work out that way.
It doesn't
way.
Work out.
I got 52 weekends out of the year, if that. What is it, 47 probably?
Essentially, well, I try to get at least 50, to be quite honest with you. Essentially, there is a lot of politics involved in booking, and I would be lying to you if I said I didn't use it. In fact, I'll give you an example of politics.
This is perfect. Yes, inside.
You know, you have agents that do you favors, so you want to do them favors.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, hey, listen, can you give this guy a week? You'd be like, okay, well, let me get that guy, and I'll give him both weeks. And then that would be why one person would be on 1 week,
mm-hmm.
you know. I usually use the term tent pulling because, like, you have...
Great term, by the way.
You have this giant fucking beast of a headliner
that you know is going to bring you money. Yeah.
And then the next weekend you have to paper the room because he's got great cred.
And he's funny. It's not about not being funny. These people are still funny.
He's been on Late Night. He's been on Jimmy Kimmel. You know, he's got some small stuff on Comedy Central. He's got cred. Those are creds.
Yeah.
But... 90% of the people that were thinking about going to comedy clubs that night have no fucking clue who the guy is.
People at home, by the way, you're a fucking novice, all right? You're killing me. Because you don't know your research. You know five fucking guys, and it just recently became Brian Regan in that top five. That guy's been floating around where only, like, his true fans know who he is, and he's incredible, right?
He's huge. And that's another thing that's, you know, with social media is, you know, you got guys who completely avoided the way up and now are huge.
Yeah.
Which, God bless them. Any way to get there.
Yeah. You see my face like, right now.
This podcast could be one way. But one of the things, you know, like you said to the people at home, you know, what I would love to get the message out to people at home is that artists really need your support.
Yes. Like
going on to YouTube and watching a guy that you might not know and watching all of his set and saying, you know, I might not go tonight because I just watched all of his set is fucking crap.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing beats a live show. Whether it be music, and musicians, I'm giving you some clout here, or being a comedian, nothing beats it live. Nothing beats the feeling of being there, being part of that experience, having the comedian look at you while he's saying a punchline, maybe even talking to you.
Yeah.
Nothing beats the live. So please, stop with the fucking YouTube and not going places.
This is the most antisocial period we're in right now, I believe, because of social media. Right. We don't have to interact, and we think we're interacting via Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, and it's not. You're right. People need to go out and be involved. Please.
That's what makes the fucking world go round.
Seriously.
That's why people depend.
It's not kumbaya shit either. That's reality. That's science, motherfucker.
Tickets to be sold in order for this shit to actually fucking happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when you're sitting at home jerking off on your couch, you know what I'm saying?
Come meet somebody.
Right.
You know how many people I've gotten laid, folks? And I'm no Nick DiPaolo, all right? I'm a low-level headliner, and I've gotten a lot of people fucking laid because the guy got to shut his stupid mouth and let his girl laugh, and they had a conversation piece, and then I got emails, I can prove it. Email me, I'll let you know.
She goes home feeling fucking great.
Sure.
Next thing you know, it's on like Donkey Kong.
Amen.
And that's the thing. I mean, support the person. Don't just watch them on YouTube. You might be the best blogger fucking... poster, fucking Twitter, Twitter, fucking, you might write the best fucking things in the world and have so many followers and this and that,
mm-hmm.
but if you're not going out talking to people in the real world, guess what? You're fucking
You're
loser.
Nothing. And you know Seriously. What? What sucks is that in your industry, a lot of people, a lot of bookers, a lot of owners of clubs book some of these people.
Based on their followers.
The fact that they know 100, 200 people will show up if they tweet it out,
mm-hmm.
and then they get on stage and drop a turd.
Right. And then the people look at the club.
And then they look at the comedy club. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what the fuck is that guy? Yeah, I saw that guy at that place. They'll remember the venue. Right.
Exactly.
The guy's an afterthought.
And they think, like, the club had something to do with his act and this and that.
When they're just kind of trying to pander to you assholes. Yeah. You showed up to watch this guy.
It's so funny because I think it was Jerry Seinfeld who said something about, like, you know, here I am trying to please all these people and then after the show I see them and I'm like, these are the people I was trying to make like me. I think that he said something along those lines and, you know, people don't understand how tough it is to be a comedian and how tough this position is. First off, it's the only position that someone could just claim themselves that position.
Yeah, that's right.
I literally get 2,000 emails a day from people claiming to be a comedian, and I'm like, oh, okay, where have you performed? Well, I was at the dorm room the other day, and I took a bong hit and farted, and my buddy said I was funny, so hey, I'm a comedian. Or they go to open mics where there's the same group of open micers that laugh at each other's jokes, so their material isn't vague enough to be in front of an audience that spans fucking 10 people. You know, but in their Facebook, name is Comedian Mike Brown.
Sure,
and
because there's
a Mike Brown
that,
comedian out there, I apologize to offend you. But I'm just saying, it's like...
There's no police for that.
Yeah, and that's just starting.
Yeah.
You have all that bullshit.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you got to go through the open mics. You have to be constantly writing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be making material, writing material that, you know, that can be going out to masses. You can't just... I mean, people that are at that level now of professionalism where they have groups of fans, then it's fortunate that they can have a material set to that stock of fan. But until you build that stock of fan, you need material that people are going to laugh at, or crowds that you know that material is going to work with.
Yeah.
And it sucks.
You got to earn your keep. You got to earn it.
And it goes by going on stage every fucking night, 5 times a night in some cities where you're fortunate
enough
to be able to do
that. New York City. Yeah, that's why I moved there. Yeah.
And keep trying and trying at new ways of doing it. And even though you might love a fucking a joke, if it do it 5 times and it doesn't fucking work, guess what?
It's out. It's out of the fucking
fold
set
the
list.
The fucking poker hand, motherfucker. And if you don't know how to be a professional at that point, guess what? Maybe this isn't for you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe.
I feel like you have that that bite about you that you see a lot of people and you're like, okay, I know what probably is going to take to do this, and I'm not seeing that.
Right.
It's interesting because this is the only room, only club I know about. I'm sure there's other ones in Rochester, but this is the only one to me that matters.
This is the only A room.
That's what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's
so young talent,
yeah.
If you're only open 4 nights for the headliners and then maybe 1 or 2 on special occasions, there's not much for the young talent to do here yet. Or is there?
But in Rochester, actually, there's a whole bunch of coffee shops that do open mics and stuff like that. And and we do something all summer long called the Funniest Person in Rochester Contest.
Oh, that's great.
We had 144 entries
this year. I wouldn't doubt it. I bet.
It
was with all the colleges around here and the arts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. We're down to 6 people. That's actually, the finals is actually this Wednesday night. This previous Wednesday, we were oversold. We had people in the foyer looking with their heads in and
awesome.
Stuff like that. So that is a great way for people to come here. And then I always tell these guys, I say, listen, you know, if it's a major, major show where I'm contracted for seat by seat, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do because that's the contract.
Mm-hmm.
I go, but there's a lot of guys coming here. Like tonight, Greg Hahn is here.
Mm-hmm.
He's at a Comedy Central special. He's huge on Bob and Tom and this and that. Bob and Tom, excuse me. And he's employed. I think he's booked right now for 2 years in advance. So,
jeez.
I mean, that's huge for somebody in this business.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I say, come in and talk to these guys.
Yeah.
Get to know them and this and that. Or move to New York or L.A.
Because that's what it's going to take to get here, is you got to go to, you know, unfortunately, to headline this room, you got to go to a larger market,
absolutely.
Succeed, and then I can look at your email then and book you maybe.
Right.
I mean, that's the reality of the situation.
One of the prizes that we're fortunate enough to have in this contest this year is that a friend of mine at APA is going to give somebody a audition.
That's huge. That's a big deal.
People don't some people don't even.
Even as a courtesy, it's a big deal.
Because how tough is it for people to get an audition?
Trust me. It's very tough.
it's
not easy.
But you're guaranteed 7 minutes.
Someone's going to look at you for 7 minutes.
Yes.
Even if they have to show up to look at you, they're going
to
show up and do it.
They might hate you or like you, but
you got undivided attention for 7 minutes.
What if?
Exactly. That's a huge, what if, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, so, that's huge. That's a big prize.
And, like, when I tell some of the headliners about the prize, first off, you get first place is $1,000 cash. Then you get the audition, and then you get 3 weeks' worth of work here to open up for, you know, Giants.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, that's...
That, you can't beat that at all.
That's why we get such a, you know...
Oh, yeah, that's a great prize, man. Yeah. That's fucking great.
So, you know, for a lot of people to, you know, that are just coming up, go to the open mics, you know, right? But, you know, that's one of the things that we do over the summertime to kind of get over the summertime lulls of comedy clubs. Yeah. Because, unfortunately... I talk to a lot of people in the comedy business.
It's so seasonal, right?
Yeah. It's summertime is this. It's weddings. It's graduation parties. In a city like this, we have 8 months worth of you know, rain and snow.
Terrible weather. That's why I came here to see Bruce in January, and we had a drive from Buffalo because the plane couldn't land here through a fucking blizzard, and you're like, this is brutal.
Yeah, and that's every day.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Yeah. Like, and it's, we got a foot of snow last night. Guess what? We got to go to work. There's no canceling around here.
Yeah. Come out when it's fucking raining and snowing.
We throw down salt and shit. We go to work and we go to fucking school, you pussies, the rest of the country. But, you know, so the 3 months of the summer, you know, we're right next to this lake where people have cottages and boats.
Well, it's beautiful.
They're obviously going to choose choice A over B.
Sure.
So, you know, to help the guys out that are just coming up, we do the contest. There's open mics that can do it. And, you know, this is really a blessed city for people to take that first step. And I tell them they can meet people through here, connections through here. But really, if you really want to be part of this business, you know, Josh, you know, you got to be in New York or you got
to
be in LA.
Yeah, there's no way around it. And that's so great that you give them an opportunity to, they still have a place where they could see in a market that, like I said, it's very unlikely in my eyes as a comic. I've been everywhere to see like a place like this get guys that huge that if I'm, you know, Johnny Joe Blow and I want to do stand-up, and I'm 22,
right.
I could walk in here if I build a relationship with the club.
Absolutely.
And you're cool enough to go, oh, well, you know, come in and just check it out.
If you give me a five-minute clip and I can see that you can handle your stage presence and your overall with your material looks pretty good, guess what? You're definitely guaranteed an MC spot.
See? That's huge.
From there, I'm definitely going to watch it because I watch every fucking show.
Yeah,
you know, that's one of the things I do. I'm in the trenches with these people, helping them out with their tables and this and that. But at the same time, I'm listening to hear applause breaks. I'm watching to see who's holding people's attention. I'm listening to see, you know, what the laughter's like, what the material is like, how is the comedian's timing, every aspect of it. You know, it's not just two pieces of a puzzle, an audience and a comedian. It's a lot
of moving parts, right?
There's so many moving parts to make it complete. But there's nothing more magical when you have somebody on stage. And it's sold out.
They're so synced in.
And everybody, it literally brings hair. It's the best, man.
Yeah, oh, my God.
And that's exactly why I've done what I've done to the point where I'm at.
Yeah, so, I love that, man. Yeah. I love that. This is a good place to plug the club and where they can go.
Well, yeah,
and
just go to thecomedyclub.us. You can see our upcoming shows. We're in Webster, New York, which is right outside of Rochester. It's only 5 minutes away, and it's a great place. It's just called The Comedy Club.
It's really simplistic, as we've been talking about for 40 minutes. Right. It's really to the point.
You're not going to go to an Applebee's with a stage in the corner.
Fuck, though. And they're connected to this great venue. I mean, a lot of young people must go in there, and the hot chicks,
right?
Attractive people, bands.
Absolutely. And there's new owners over there that just, they care. Before, when it was Daisy Dukes, it was horrible bathrooms in this horrible situation.
It was dive beyond the good part of being dive, right? Yeah.
We have a chef that studied with Bobby Flay for 8 months. The food here is phenomenal.
Now. Wow. So, yeah, I got to come eat here now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. You got any like social media, anything they should look out for? Instagram, anything they can follow?
Comedy Club New York, Twitter at comedyclub.new York, and Facebook is The Comedy Club.
Awesome.
And thecomedyclub.us.
Well, thanks, dude.
Thank you,
I'm
man.
Glad we got
fun.
That fucking awesome,
sorry,
right?
Yeah, sorry it was a little warm in the green room.
No, man, it feels great. I feel loose, like I'm going into a big fight. It's
awesome.
Perfect.
I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming on, man. All right, give it up for Mark. Mark, thank you, brother, for listening to this, which I hope you are, because it's you. You're the guest. If you're not listening to it, we have a problem. But thank you, man, for having me in and being so cordial and hospitable and opening your doors and your heart to me. And you're great. Great guest. So all of you out there, go and make sure you follow the Comedy Club on Twitter. If you're ever near the Rochester area, it's worth the drive from wherever you're at.
go there. It's a great club. I did a guest spot. Mark was gracious enough to let me do a guest spot. And the audiences are just really great, working class, good people, laugh. They were great laughers. And like you heard, Mark knows how to treat performers. So go support it. They need you there. They need you. Are you hearing me? Support live comedy. It's not about Netflix. It's a whole different experience to be there in person like we talked about. So go and do that. Also, you can follow me at Josh Accardo on Instagram, Twitter. You can also follow the show at Slampick Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And you can also email the show, slampickpodcast@gmail.com, and I'll read your emails and whatnot. I also have a really great project that should be announced pretty soon. I'm working with Maureen Van Zandt on a radio show, different than this one, but great all the same. All right, so that's the show this week. I love you guys. I love you for listening. Please go tell a friend. Sharing's caring. Subscribe, and if you could rate, that would be great, because the more subscribers and the more ratings I get, the even more guests are going to want to come on, and that allows me to do my thing, which I'm pretty fucking good at. You know, I'm pretty fucking good at it, okay? Anyways, all right. Thanks again, Mark Ippolito from the Comedy Club in Rochester. And thank you to you guys, and I will talk to you very soon.